Pirates, Baseball Central, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, and Kevin Barker. Blue Jays back in action tonight as they start a two-game series in Arizona against the Diamondbacks. Game today, game tomorrow, day off Thursday, back home against the Seattle Mariners. They gained a half game on the Baltimore Orioles yesterday. Now 2.5 games back of the O's for first in the American League East after the Orioles lost 2-1 to the New York Yankees. Coming up this hour, we will talk to John Morosi, national baseball writer, MLB Network. Kev, we've got a couple minutes here to discuss. Hey, how's it going? What would you do for your off day? Like, what do you watch on your off day when the Blue Jays aren't on? Are you a big...
I watch baseball.
Oh, you don't watch The Bachelorette or anything?
Who?
The Bachelorette?
No.
Okay. Remember watching the Republican National Convention or anything?
I watched parts of that.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
There's only so much you can watch.
Yes, I agree. There's only so much Scott Baio a person can absorb. 100%.
Small sample sizes.
And we'll talk about the Yankees and their win over the Orioles before the hour is done here, probably after we say goodbye to John. Actually, we might bring it up with John as well. But yeah, that was on Sportsnet yesterday and a great game. Oh, give me a 2-1 game over an 8-7 game any day of the week. Do you feel that way, Kev? Or would you rather see the offense?
I'd like to see 12-3.
Okay. Really?
Well, that's a lot of runs scored, a lot of home runs.
You'd rather see a five-hour game?
Yeah. Well, it's better than 2-1.
Yeah, 2-1's a great game. Give me 1-0.
I guess if it's the compelling Yankees and you're running out the three guys they run out from a seventh inning on, yeah, maybe, and you're seeing 105 from a left-hander, that's pretty cool.
That's ridiculous.
That's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, 105, which I can't get over, because you think of 95, that's pretty hard. That's it. If you're throwing 95, you're throwing gas. Like, that's sure. Marcus Stroman, when he touches 95, you're like, oof, boy.
I'm feeling 95.
He's touched it a couple times this year. But yeah, and I know Aaron Sanchez sits 97, but we're talking about a guy who throws 10 miles an hour harder than that. Yesterday, Aroldis Chapman hitting 105.
Maybe that's why everybody in baseball wants him on their team.
It's part of the reason, yes. I would say a pretty significant portion.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way the human eye can even see 105 coming out of the hand. And if you're a left-handed hitter, like, I don't know. And Ryan Flaherty, poor Ryan Flaherty.
Yeah, that's weird, huh? That Buck Showalter sent up the lefty and not bring in righties. That was yeah. Different.
Yeah. Yeah. And he grounded out to end the game, and then his bat, at least he got two contacts out of it, broke his bat, and then the bat hit
never
the ball.
Never seen that either.
Right? Like, you've been around this game a lot. You've probably seen some weird stuff in the minor leagues. You'd never seen anything like that?
No. No, I've never seen a guy throw 105.
Yeah, that's true.
No, it would take 105 for the bat to go actually further than the ball.
Yes.
And then hit it again. It's...
And yeah, then to make the play on that ball.
Yeah, it was, you know, all around. It's just, you know, whenever you watch a guy like Chapman throwing, I think you come to realize that you're seeing something you're never going to see again. You'll probably never see a guy, a left-hander, that can sit at 101, 102, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, it's like underhanding
it. And top out at 105, you'll never see that again.
It's like 99, he's like, oh, I don't feel right. I'm only throwing
taking
99.
A little off.
Yeah. It's like his changeup is 95.
And he throws strikes. For the most part, he throws strikes. Yeah. On occasion, he'll chuck one over the batting stop just to basically say, don't dig in on me. And I'm, yeah, all right. You never know. And then he spots down and away at 99. Well, stay hot.
Yeah.
You'll get him.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Blue Jays have gotten to him briefly in his career, though, in limited sample size.
Right-handed batters. Yeah, it's obvious that the Blue Jays have some of the best right-handed hitters in baseball on their team. And even a guy like Chapman that throws 105 has to take a little bit off and spot that heater, because he's center cutting that thing to good hitters.
Yeah.
And they know it's coming.
It can go a long way.
Well, not so much that as much as they can put the big part of the bat on the ball. I'm not saying he can hit, you know, you can hit a home run, because it's hard to elevate that pitch. You have to be perfect. You have to get it out in front, and mile per hour keeps you from getting it out front. Blue Jays seem to hit it hard, and, you know, when you're right hand, you're good, you're good.
My favorite Munenori Kawasaki Blue Jays moment involves Aroldis Chapman when he was able, Mooney was able to get down a bunt in that comeback game in Cincinnati. I don't know if you recall, they were down like 8 runs and they came all the way back.
Kratz, he won it with a double off the wall or something.
Yeah, you got a good memory. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Mooney put down a bunt, somehow got it down off 102. But yeah, the Blue Jays, in very limited sample size, have actually shown the ability to get to Aroldis Chapman. But that's besides the point. Start a two-game series, as mentioned, in Arizona tonight against the Diamondbacks. And Aaron Sanchez, he's like, boy, is he a lightning rod of conversation when it comes to this Blue Jays team, rotation, bullpen. How does that affect what Blue Jays try and acquire before August 1st? But he gets to hit tonight.
Who? What?
Aaron Sanchez.
Gets the hit. That's funny.
Yeah, he gets the hit. And, you know.
Hit what?
I don't know. He's going to try and hit a baseball.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to bet that John Gibbons says, if you swing at that, you owe me $7
billion. $7
billion? Yeah.
So he doesn't even get to swing? That's a huge disadvantage. Well,
you saw Marco Estrada swing, and what happens? He's on the DL. You 100%. Lose Aaron Sanchez no matter what.
Well, it's a huge disadvantage to, okay, it's one
100%
thing.
100% it is. Yeah, we've had this conversation about the American League going to the National League and playing these games. The American League's at a disadvantage because the pitcher, you see what it is, it's easy out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's basically, they really don't even know how to bunt.
No.
So you're not helping your team at all.
Nope.
So that's what I'm telling you. If John Gibbons does not say, I want you to go and stand in the very part of the batter's box, as far away from the plate as you can possibly stand, and stand like a statue for three pitches, you owe me $7 billion.
Well, actually, you know what? That's actually, I'm thinking back to his last interleague start was in Colorado, and there was a moment where, yeah, a bunt would have really helped his team. I think there was two on and none out in the eighth inning, and
did Gibby say? Gibby said, I'd rather have first and second with one out than third base with two outs.
Or somebody
getting hurt hit in the face and fouling a ball off. You know, if you don't bunt, everybody says, oh, why didn't this guy bunt? Well, because you don't bunt all the time. And bunting off of guys that throw super hard are not very easy. It's not an easy thing to do to actually, you know, make that ball go where you want and deaden it enough that you can move the runners up. Now, obviously, some role players have to do that. Junior Lake comes to mind the last time he played.
Yeah.
But those are role players that are expected to do that. And you saw what John Gibbons did. He saw Lake trying to bunt for a hit. Basically, that says, I don't know how to bunt. Mm-hmm. So he takes it off because, again, it gets back to that. I'd rather have first and second one out than third base with two outs. So,
speaking of which, I got your baseball reference page up, which I always do when we do the show together. Zero sack bunts in the major leagues, but two in the minor leagues for you. You did have two sack bunts in the minor leagues. What happened there? What was that about?
I must have been – who knows? That's the dumbest stat you've ever read to me.
Well,
I have no clue.
I thought maybe there was only two of them, so maybe you remembered them.
No.
Okay. We're gonna remember them.
That's funny.
We're gonna talk to John Morosi in a couple of minutes here. But yeah, the Blue Jays start this series tonight after losing 2 out of 3 in Oakland to the A's. It was disappointing that they blew leads in all three of those games. Josh Donaldson saving them from being swept potentially in that third game, mm-hmm. tie game, and comes up with a big 2-run double in the ninth inning to salvage a 5-3 win over the Oakland A's, who are going to try and play spoiler here down the stretch. Same deal with the Diamondbacks because they're, by and large, out of it.
Well, they're terrible.
They're not very good. They're bad.
They're 17-33 at home.
And they blew their brains out getting Zach Greinke in the offseason and Shelby Miller. They traded away all their future for and Shelby Miller's in AAA right now. Like, that is...
Oops.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not funny because...
Yeah, it is. It's funny.
It'd be a good story if the Diamondbacks were good for baseball and it would make the NL
series.
West a lot more fun to watch.
It's still fun. They were supposed
to be in it with San Fran and L.A. They were supposed to be right there. It would have been a lot more fun. It's like the American League East. The American League East is a 3-team race, right? Yep. We can agree on that.
Yes.
If the West was that way, it'd be a lot more fun to watch. Everybody be tuned in. Now it's like, the Giants... or 5.5 up. Hey, they have 3 number ones on the same team. They know how to manufacture runs. They play in a big ballpark. Because of that fact that you can't hit the home run, they have to manufacture runs. That, to me, makes them the front runner when they get in the playoffs. Because in the playoffs, you don't hit a lot of home runs. You're facing the best of the best pitchers on the planet, and they know how to keep it in the yard. So how do you win those games? You manufacture runs. You do the little things. You play defense all the time. You have a really good manager, and your starting rotation dominates. That's what San Francisco does.
Well, and it's amazing that two teams in that division over the last couple of years, the Padres and last year the Diamondbacks, have gone out in off seasons and done everything within their power to join the ranks of the Dodgers and the Giants as the powerhouses in that division. Blew up spectacularly in the Padres' face a couple of years ago. Matt Kemp and Will Myers is good, but James Shields was an abject disaster. That didn't work out. Derek Norris... he's okay as well. But, yeah, they were not good 2 years ago and still aren't. And then this offseason, the Diamondbacks go out and try to immediately turn themselves into a contender with former Blue Jay Dave Stewart at the helm. And yeah, that didn't work either. Just like in 2013, the Blue Jays thought, you know, trading for Jose Reyes and Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey and you get Josh Johnson, that's going to turn you into a winner. That didn't work either.
Well, I think what all those things you just mentioned, the first thing that comes to my mind is defense. Mm-hmm. Jose Reyes, what did he not do when he was a Blue Jay?
Play defense.
There you go. You add a guy like Troy Tulowitzki that plays defense as a quarterback of the team. He's starting to hit. That makes your lineup that much deeper and longer, and he catches everything in the near area code. When you do that, it helps everything on the field. It makes everybody around you better, and it hides weaknesses. That's what it does. Great defenses is like Pilar, like Russell Martin. Now, obviously not this year. Russell's having a down year behind the plate, but you got that. You got Troy Tulowitzki. You got whoever's playing second base. They're all play defense. You have Justin Smoak. There's a reason why they signed Justin Smoak, because he plays defense, and you have to do that.
I think he's a little overrated defensively, but okay.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
he is. Why do you say that?
Just because I watch him every day.
He catches everything right at him?
Well, okay, yeah.
And he catches the ball when it's bounced to him.
Yeah, occasionally. He's not Mark DeSherritt. For his base, he's a fine defender. But I think, you know, reports
Well, Mark DeSherritt, to me, he's never on the field to be good.
Right.
I mean, when you're not on the field long enough to be – well, hey, again, it's like, you know, everybody has their opinion, but this is what – the Blue Jays front staff was thinking, hey, we got defense.
Yep.
We think defense first. We think pitching, and then we think some timely hitting.
It's 12-11, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Baseball Central, Ben Ennis, Kevin Barker. It is time to talk to one of the best on baseball here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. John Morosi joins us, national baseball writer, MLB Network. John, thanks for this. This is your time to shine. I've mentioned this to you before, but you know it. This is your 2 weeks, your 3 weeks where you got to make sure the phone is all charged up, and could be an exciting couple of weeks before the non-waiver trade deadline.
I expect it's going to be, guys. I think it's going to be one of the more active deadlines we've seen, because as much as we talk about the teams that are still on the fringe, and the Yankees certainly are that, and you maybe could argue the Rockies and certainly the White Sox as well are sort of on the bubble, there are still 10 or 11 pretty clear sellers, where I think we're seeing a fairly stark contrast in the industry now, where I think you have enough teams that have some very good players. The Rays, I think, are one team that have a number of very good players that are very intriguing, that are certainly a clear seller. The Reds with Jay Bruce, the Rockies, I think, again, if they decide to sell, Charlie Blackmon, Carlos Gonzalez. I mean, there are some legitimate names out there. And, of course, the White Sox, if things go really the wrong direction, you do wonder about Sale and Quintana in addition to Todd Frazier. So while it's been, I think, from the standpoint of deal-making, not especially active so far outside of Drew Pomerantz going to Boston, I think we're going to see a lot of deals coming up. I think it's going to be a very, very active couple of weeks here for the industry.
JP, first question, all of those names you mentioned, any chance one of those come to the Blue Jays? And second question, what do the Blue Jays do? Mark Shapiro is very good. I bet he's a very good poker player, because you talk to him, you're around him, he doesn't give up his hand very much. And, you know, I think everybody wants to know, what's the Blue Jays doing? Are they going bullpen? Are they going hitting? Are they going starting pitching? What have you heard the Blue Jays are going to do, if anything?
Well, Kevin, I think the word on the Jays right now is pitching. And I spoke with a couple executives yesterday who said the Jays are really, really looking at pitching right now. And two names I've heard that the Jays have been scouting and connected to so far, Jeremy Hellickson in Philadelphia and Jorge De La Rosa in Colorado. Now, De La Rosa has a full no-trade clause, left-handed pitcher, of course. Both Hellickson and De La Rosa are free agents after the season is over. The Jays, I think, guys, at this point in time, I know there's been some back and forth about what the plan truly is with Aaron Sanchez, but I think clearly the Jays have to get one more starting pitcher, because some combination of, you have a lot of uncertainty. You've got the uncertainty about Sanchez's innings, the uncertainty about Estrada's back, and the uncertainty about Stroman's performance. So one of those three things, or two of those three things, if they're answered in the negative, you need one or two pitchers. I mean, you need to do that. Now, I realize Hutchinson is there, but I think that they need at least one starting pitcher to ensure against all that uncertainty that I just mentioned.
It's
so that's where I think the conversation comes in with Hellickson and De La Rosa. I realize both are free agents after the season is over, but the Jays, if they're going to compete here, guys, they need one more starting pitcher. I believe, I think the Jays believe that as well.
Yeah, and it certainly seems that if they're going to make an acquisition, it would be an arm, whether it's a starter or a reliever. And both those guys, De La Rosa and Hellickson, and Hellickson's having a better year than De La Rosa, but De La Rosa pitches in Coors half the time. I understand that. Also, there's a lot of teams in the market for starting pitching, and we saw the price paid for Drew Pomeranz by the Boston Red Sox. You figure they're not done. The Orioles need to do something, you'd figure. My goodness, that rotation. It's amazing they've gotten to the place they have with that rotation. Does it, I mean, it seems like it's going to be a dogfight out there if you're even just trying to get like a league average starter like Jeremy Hellickson, John.
Yes, certainly the price will be very high. I think also you have to bear in mind that the one piece that was new this week in this industry in terms of the trade market is the fact that Rich Hill, now after leaving that start on Sunday with after five pitches with a blister, his marketplace is now entirely uncertain. And the A's, from what I was told, would have wanted to actually move him by now so they could focus on the possibility of trading Sonny Gray. Obviously, those plans are now scuttled. It's uncertain exactly what's happening now with Oakland. So I think the price is going to be high. It certainly won't be as high for a rental as it was for Drew Pomeranz, because remember, there's not really a David Price out there right now. That ace pitcher who is in the final year of his contract, Rich Hill is really the closest to that in terms of his performance. And he is really, you know, this time last year was in the minor leagues and a very uncertain pitcher from the standpoint of where exactly he was in his career. So there's not that robust rental market. So I do think, to your point, Ben, when you talk about the pitching out there, if you're looking at Jose Quintana becoming available, or Sonny Gray, or Chris Archer, yes, the price on those guys will be exorbitant, but I'm not convinced that any of those three, much less all three of those three, are going to actually be moved because of a variety of factors right now. So I think you do have various different price points along the line of that continuum of pitching, and I do think for the Jays, they want to hold on to their prospects, by and large. I think, could they sacrifice one of them to get someone like Hellickson or De La Rosa? Yes, they could. But I think, by and large, this front office guys, they really are prioritizing building from within. And I think they want to build from within a lot, which means the likes of Rowdy Tellez, probably, in all likelihood, especially because it looks like Encarnacion is leaving. I think Tellez in particular, the Jays are going to want to keep here at this deadline.
JP, now you said Edwin may be leaving. Does that have anything to do with why they would sign Justin Smoke as quickly as they did?
Yes, I think it completely does.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now, Kevin, I think it looks like the Jays are preparing for life after Encarnacion. I think they are. I think that was part of the Smoke trade. I think there is the Smoke signing, and it's part of the reason why I think they want to keep Rowdy Tellez, because they realize that with the comments recently publicly from Encarnacion's agent to the effect of no further conversations happening during the course of the season, I think it's likely that he's gone. I do. I think that when you look at the Jays right now, remember this, with the way this team looks and the fact that Josh Donaldson is coming up after the season, he'll only have two more years left after the season's over on before free agency, and they have to replace all of Dickey's innings in the rotation, there are other priorities. And with Justin Smoke, with where he is at, if they feel like they've got Rowdy Tellez, who probably among their position players is the closest to being an everyday player in the major leagues, he's a first base / DH, they have to allocate their money elsewhere. They cannot really give Encarnacion the money that he wants because really, and I said this yesterday on Tim and Sid, you look at the big picture here, guys. You've only got a certain amount of money to spend on a hitter. And if you tell every Jays fan you could pick one guy between the three to keep, Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson, I think about 90% of the fans would say keep Donaldson.
Yes.
And that's probably what the Jays are going to try to do. And that being said, guys, if they can't keep him, if they can't keep Donaldson this wintertime, you have to consider the possibility of trading him. You've got to try to sign him, and if you can't sign him, you got to consider at least the possibility of trading him. That's the reality. The Jays do not have unlimited funds. Everything about the way that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins have run things at this point in time tells you they have a budget, and they have to stay within that budget. And unless that changes, unless they become the Dodgers tomorrow, they've got a big decision to make on Donaldson. And that decision is you got to sign him, or you got to consider the possibility of trading him, period. That's just the way the economics of the game works when you have a superstar player who's 2 years away from free agency.
Yeah, JP, now, with all that being said, in your mind, no chance Jose Bautista would sign back with the Blue Jays?
I wouldn't say no chance, but I think for Bautista and Encarnacion both, I think they're looking at the Jays as one of 30 places they could possibly sign. I don't think that there's this notion of a hometown discount. I just think that they're both at the stage of their careers. Certainly Edwin's young enough where this is his really big kick at the can. He's got a chance to make a ton of money. I just don't think that that's part of their plan. I would not rule out that possibility. I think it's interesting that Carrera has played as well as he has for Toronto here recently. So I think that the Jays look at this big picture and say, you know what, there are probably different ways we can make this team work. They've already got a ton of money locked into Tulo, a ton of money locked into Russ, and they're probably preparing to spend a ton of money on Donaldson to keep him. So when you look at those three guys and those three contracts, and Saunders is one more possibility. What are you going to do with him? So I think you look at the big picture here, and if they are going to try to keep a couple of these guys, I think you're probably trying to sign Donaldson, you try to sign Saunders, and then you probably let Bautista and Edwin walk. I think that's probably from a standpoint of the most you can do with your money, that's probably, I think, the most effective way to spend. Obviously, ideally, you keep everybody. I realize that. But I think it's not practical. I think where the salary demands are for both Bautista and Edwin, I think the most likely thing is one or probably both of them are playing somewhere else in 2017.
Talking to John Morosi, national baseball writer, MLB Network. We got to go back to Donaldson because you threw the kerosene on the fire there, John, talking about the Blue Jays looking at trading him. He signed the 2-year deal prior to this season, so he's under contract. They have a number already for 2017, and then he's arbitration eligible his final year in 2018, so wouldn't be a free agent to 2019. But you really think that like they'll have extension talks maybe at the end of this season, and it's like that? I mean, there could be a tipping point as soon as at the end of this season?
Yes. I mean, guys, look around the game. Most of the time when you see a player that is of high stature for a team that they cannot sign long-term within 2 years of free agency, that is the magic number, 2 years. And if you can't get the guy signed within 2 years, usually they're headed to free agency or they get traded before that happens. I mean, you can look around the industry. That is the magic number. Now, I don't know. I am not qualified at this point in time to handicap the likelihood that Donaldson's going to sign. These are numbers that we don't know quite yet. We have to wait for him to finish the year. They're not even talking right now, as far as I can tell, about what the extension would be because, as you pointed out, Ben, he's got a deal for next year. All I'm saying is this winter time is the reckoning, okay? This is when you have to figure out where you're going here. I think if Bautista and Encarnacion walk and they have the money there, the capacity to sign Donaldson, I think there's still a pretty good chance he gets signed. All I'm saying is if he doesn't get signed for beyond 2018, this winter time, mm-hmm. then the possibility of a trade is legitimate. I'm not saying it's a high possibility, but I'm saying it's there. And this is the way the economics of the game works, especially when you look at the way that Shapiro and Atkins have done business in Cleveland for a very, very long time. That's been the tradition there. They've usually looked at about 2 years out. They've signed players long-term, or they've let them walk, or they've traded them. That's what they do.
Yep.
And so I think you have to look at past history of both the economics writ large of the game and the way the Indians have done business. Again, I still think it's probably more likely than not that Donaldson signs long-term, and I think it's probably the right play at this point in time. My point just is, if he does not sign long-term before opening day 2017, the chances of a trade with him are increasing by the day.
It's interesting stuff to think about. John, thanks so much for this. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Busy couple weeks ahead, gentlemen. Always love talking baseball this time of year.
Thanks, John. So do we. I know it is. It's going to be busy for him. John Morosi, national baseball writer, MLB Network. Okay, let's chew on that for a bit, Kev. Because, I mean, it's not an issue for this team right now. In 2016, the Blue Jays are trying to win a World Series. They're not worrying about whether Josh Donaldson is signed up long-term, but I mean, we can discuss it. Because it's, I think, an interesting point to discuss in that, okay, so Josh Donaldson is under contract for 2017, and he's arbitration eligible again for the final time in 2018, which means he's a potential free agent in 2019. Mm-hmm. He'll be 33 years old, playing third base, and who knows what the economics of the game are going to be, but mm-hmm. he's the reigning American League MVP. He got better this year somehow, like across the board. His numbers are better offensively. And defensively, he's been better too. Who knows if that can continue. But like the best players in baseball in 2019 might be making like $45 million a year over 10 years.
Well, I think what JP's trying to say is if the Blue Jays, hypothetically speaking, don't make the playoffs, where is Mark Shapiro going to go with his team? I think that's what he's trying to say. Now, obviously, if they go deep in the playoffs, they make it to the World Series, probably all these questions are going to answer themselves. That's just the way it goes. They make it to the World Series, and we're hypothetically saying they win the World Series.
Yeah.
All these things will take care of themselves, okay? Yeah. If not, hypothetically. Now, all these conversations we're having here, it's not – we're having it because he brought it up.
Yeah.
Okay, so –
It's your fault, John.
Yeah, well, no, he makes a lot of sense.
No, for sure.
Your biggest asset on your team and what you could get the most out of is your best player. Who's the best player on your team? And if you're going a different direction and you want to build within, what's the best way to do that? Get rid of your best one. Your best one is Josh Donaldson. And just say, you know, he's on his way now to win another MVP. Well, what's to say he's not going to? Well,
he's on pace to.
And say they don't win, they don't make the playoffs. Here's where he's trying to say, you know, all of a sudden you would get rid of three guys. Say you keep Michael Saunders because you have to keep somebody to play somewhere. You're not going to – the other three are going to outprice themselves basically, and you're looking to go a different direction. How can you get the most out of those three guys? Well, the one guy keeps popping up.
It's a conversation that's not necessarily relevant this season, obviously. Like the Blue Jays
obviously not.
Yeah. The Blue Jays aren't trading Josh Donaldson.
And he didn't say that.
No, I know he didn't.
He said the closer it gets to 2017, is that what he said? Yeah, 2017, he's talking about the offseason, and basically that's where this team's at. You know, because what is this team? Right now they're in third place. You know, their bullpen is whatever.
Yeah.
Besides Osuna. Their starting rotation. Too. You got a couple of guys in that starting rotation. And where's all your hitting going to come from next year? Because if you get rid of the three guys he's talking about getting rid of, you don't have an offense.
No, there's obviously.
And how do you win the American League East that way?
There's a lot of moves still to play out here. But yeah, I would be shocked if the Blue Jays go to war in 2017 with Kevin Pillar, Dalton Pompey, and Ezekiel Carrera in the outfield. I don't think that's likely, but as it stands right now, it's possible because, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, and Michael Saunders are free agents. Saunders is an interesting guy, and I got a couple of people tweeting me today about why the Blue Jays aren't engaged in extension talks with Michael Saunders. He's a tough one to figure out because this is totally out of nowhere. Like, he's had moments where he's been very good. He's never been this good. Like, this is – and he's hitting lefties, and I know he's had, like, a couple of dips in the road, but – I mean, we're now talking about a sample size of 358 plate appearances. He's hitting fourth for one of the best teams in the American League East.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Michael Saunders' year.
That's exactly what you would say if you were about to take something away from him.
I think this is one of those situations to me where he's taking advantage of where he's at, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's in a very good lineup hitting behind two of the best hitters in baseball, and when Troy Tulowitzki's hot like he is now, there's a really good guy hitting behind him. You're stuck in between all of those guys. People tend to forget about you because you played 82 games the last two seasons. You know, you start getting better pitches than other guys would get. I'm not taking anything away from him because you still have to hit it. And he's having a heck of a season. And he's one of the main reasons why they're where they're at. You can take nothing away from that. He's taking advantage of it. But I think it's more of why you don't hear the Blue Jays just coming out and throwing a bunch of money at him is because of the reason I just mentioned and the reasons you just mentioned. This came out of nowhere. You're not real sure if he can do it again. Next year, do you really want to go out and throw a bunch of money at a guy that's, you know, has only played the last two seasons, 82 games, and really hasn't done a whole lot and been an up-and-down kind of player and all of a sudden in a super good lineup, he's had one good year? That's a tough call. I would hate to be the one to have to make that call. That's a tough call. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Alex Anthopoulos made a tough call on Jose Bautista, and that gamble paid off in a big way. Same with Edwin Encarnacion, but Edwin was at least a little bit more of a known commodity because he had some big power numbers in Cincinnati. Jose Bautista, the 50 home run seasons coming out of nowhere, and then
50 home runs is a little different than hitting three with what's he hitting?
He's hitting 289, yeah. And he has 16 home
50
runs.
50 home runs will take you to a whole different level when your name's being mentioned.
Yes.
Okay. There's not a comparison there. You can't compare. Because you can't find power anymore. When you do find it, you spend the money for it.
Yeah, well, Michael Saunders has a .533 slugging percentage this
season.
Again,
I'm not taking – I don't want anybody to think I'm taking anything away from him. He's had a really good season. It's been an awesome season for him. And, again, he's one of the main reasons why they're here. But for me, it'd be real hard to go to him and give him X amount of number because of one season. That's all I'm saying. It's
don't you have a bet with Wilner? What's your bet with Wilner?
It wasn't really a bet. It was more of, you know, just you're taking an educated guess on past and now. And yeah. You can honestly, everybody here can say, oh, I can't believe you would say that. Well, I mean, you look at past numbers and you look
on your side.
And, yeah, and again, it's a long season. You know, 25 home runs a lot.
Is that what it was? I thought it was only 20.
25 is a lot of home runs in the big leagues.
He's not out of the woods yet.
You're looking at, and I hope he hits 45.
Yeah.
I hope I lose the bet because it's going to help their team. But I'm saying it's, you know, it's Mike. Let's just say it that way. It's Mike.
And it's just dinner. And it's just dinner. And you can take him to McDonald's, can't
no.
you?
No. Oh, okay. That's not how I roll.
All right.
Come on.
Okay. I got to make some bets with you, I guess.
McDonald's?
All right. So it's a steakhouse. Okay. That'll be good. So 25 home runs. Michael Saunders needs to hit, and Michael Wilner gets
a
free dinner.
I'm not sure Mike is a steak eater.
Yeah, you're right. I don't
know. I'm not real sure. I haven't talked to him about what he eats, but.
I don't know. He eats candies. Yeah.
No pork. So
definitely
yeah.
no pork.
So we're talking sushi, maybe.
Checked.
Sushi.
He doesn't eat fish sushi
or
either.
Fish.
I
got who knows. Anyway, it'll be somewhere.
So again, McDonald's probably a safe bet because he definitely likes that.
Not right. just noodles, I heard.
Yeah.
It's okay. a good place.
Yeah, sure. Whatever. When we come back, more baseball talk, including that Yankee game. And the Blue Jays now 2.5 games back of the Orioles. And according to Fangraphs, 4th best odds to win the World Series. That and plenty more coming up next. It's Baseball Central. Ben Ennis, Kevin Barker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. /12:39, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Baseball Central, Ben Ennis, Kevin Barker. Blue Jays baseball returns to the radio and television waves tonight. 9 o'clock pregame. Blue Jays and Arizona Diamondbacks, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet Now app, Aaron Sanchez against Zach Godley, who somehow managed to be undefeated 2-0 with an ERA over 5, 5-2-8. Blue Jays wrap up the series tomorrow, 3:40. Marcus Stroman against Patrick Corbin, the lefty, also with an ERA over 5. So potentially some good hitting for the Blue Jays bats next couple of games. Couple of starters with ERAs over 5 and a pretty good hitter's ballpark as well in Arizona.
So it sounds like the Blue Jays are going to lose both of those.
Well, I mean, it's baseball. Weird stuff happens, but that's pretty good matchups for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, it looks good for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, so did the 3-game series against the A's, and that didn't turn out
so
well.
Coliseum's hard to play it.
Yes.
That's the word. I've never played there, but everybody that says that goes there, it's overwhelming. It's really big. You look at foul lines and all you see is a lot of open area and a lot of easier outs that normally would be foul balls. And, you know, it changes your game there a little bit. That's the point. So
you played in Zona though, right? You played at this ballpark?
I did. Yes. I played there. Ball flies there. Yes. It is a really fun place to play.
Which is, I mean, you get that division, you get a bunch of pitchers' ballparks in San Diego, San Francisco, L.A., not so much Coors, and Coors and Arizona are two of the better hitter-friendly ballparks in all of baseball, and the Blue Jays haven't spent. I do recall the last time they were there, though. I think Edwin Encarnacion had a 3-homer game in Arizona maybe the last time they were there. Maybe producer Travis McKenzie can check on that, but I recall... I think Edwin Encarnacion having a big, big offensive game. Sorry, Travis, that I'm putting
you to
work.
Well, he has a lot of those, so you could mean...
yeah, that's right.
Lucky guess, probably.
So yesterday on Sportsnet, no Blue Jays baseball to watch, but there was Yankees baseball to watch and Orioles baseball to watch, and the Yankees doing the Blue Jays and the Red Sox a favor with that 2-1 win over the Orioles in a game I enjoyed, especially the end of it, watching those big arms that the Yankees can throw at you. So the Yankees are back to .500. And that's, I guess, something. It's an accomplishment considering where this team has been and up and down. And you read some of the stuff written by the New York media about this 10-game homestand against the Red Sox, Orioles, and Giants, and this being a make-or-break homestand for the Yankees. And if they do poorly, they'll be sellers. If they do well, maybe they'll be buyers, or they won't sell off some of their bullpen pieces. That's still a scary team, obviously, if they have a lead after 6 innings. The problem is that offense hasn't done that very often because they're not very good at scoring runs. Where do you come down on the Yankees? Because that's they're fourth in the division, 7.5 games back. And I think, boy, the Orioles, Red Sox, and Blue Jays, it's a 3-team race, I think, in the division. And then, yes, it's a little closer in the wild card standings, as they're just 5 games back of the Blue Jays for that second wild card, but ahead of them, Mariners, Royals, Tigers, Astros, and then, of course, the Jays. I don't even see the side of the equation where the Yankees can tell themselves, hey, we're just a good team, and there's a nice run ahead of us here at the second half of the season. We should start adding pieces. I think it would be absolutely foolish if they don't trade at least one of those arms in the back of the bullpen.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess they could go either way. It's just the Yankees. It's real hard to think Yankees and selling.
That's the only pushback.
Yeah, and, you know, the fan base there, they're so used to winning and expected to win all the time. Just to me, it's, can you do it? Of course you could sell one of them off. What if you don't and you work through this year, you figured it out, and then next year you added a couple pieces with the bullpen they would have next year.
But Chapman's a free agent. You can add Chapman in the offseason again anyways.
Yeah, sure. And even if you don't, then you have Betances and Miller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I mean, what better way just to let two guys slide back an inning? Mm-hmm. And then that's taken care of. This is my point. You have to – with that being said, what you just said with Chapman and his deal and what's going on in the offseason, he seems like the one guy that I would think if they were going to sell one, it would be him.
Yeah, you would figure.
Because of that reason.
Yeah, he's a pending free agent, and boy, there's a lot of teams that would clamor for a guy like that.
And I'm going to say, I think the Yankees are probably tired of not being good.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to say that.
It's amazing. We talk about they're 500, and they made the playoffs last year. Yeah. They lost. They didn't score a run in the wild card game against the Astros, but they did make the playoffs after the Blue Jays erased that 8-game deficit in the division.
Harold, I'll ask you, if the Blue Jays make the 163 game and they lose it, good season?
No. And last year, boy, I wouldn't have said last year was a good season either, but and anything can happen in one game, right? I think the way this team is constructed right now, and things might change. Say the Red Sox go out and they really shock the world, they add a Sonny Gray or another starter, then I think you're really not the favorite to win the division, because right now, frankly, I think the Blue Jays should be the favorite to win the division. Mm-hmm. I think they're in better position than both the Orioles and Red Sox when it comes to pitching and the arms they can throw at you. I mean, injuries can change that, trades can change that, but right now, I would say, yeah, it's a disappointment if the Blue Jays are even playing in that game. I think the division is very much within their grasp. And also, I mean, you add to all the things I just said, they played the Orioles and the Red Sox really well this year.
Yeah, well, bottom line, it gets to, they have 34 games on the road, meaning the Blue Jays. It all comes down to me how many games they win on the road. They're going to win a bunch. They have 34 on the road and 34 at home. Mm-hmm. They're going to win a lot of them at home because the crowd, it's awesome to play at the Rogers Center. And, you know, when you go there, you're electric and you're just used to playing at home. You hit a lot of home runs. You enjoy that part of it. When you go on the road, how do you win them? Can you manufacture runs? Can you win the games you should between that, you know, from the seventh to the ninth inning, getting it to Osuna? Can you do those things? And can Marcus Stroman, you know, I heard your caller call in and say it's all up to Marcus Stroman. Well, that's well said. It is. You know, I think it's time to be the guy. And if he carries the load a little bit, that would make that a lot easier. I said this yesterday, too. We were having this conversation. Make that decision of moving Sanchez to the pen, if that's what they want to do. I'm not real 100% sure that that's what they want to do. But if that's what they want to do, Marcus Stroman doing well makes it easier.
By the way, I want to, because Travis McKenzie did look up these numbers, I want to talk about Edwin Encarnacion at Chase Field. Yeah, he did have that 3-homer game, but that was 2 times ago. In 2010, on May 21st, he had a 3-homer game, then homered in the next 2 in Arizona. So homered, had 5 homers in the 3-game series against the Diamondbacks in Arizona in May of 2010. But the last time the Jays were there was 2013. And yeah, he hit another 2
Edwin's
home runs.
Pretty good, right?
In the 3-game series. So
he
enjoys hitting at Chase Field, but he enjoys hitting it in a lot of places.
Well, I mean, we can say it. It's official, right? The words, the jury's yes. in. He's a good hitter.
Before it wasn't, but now, yes. It's just now
jury's
official.
In.
It's official. So, yes, if you play fantasy baseball, put him in your lineup tonight against a couple of pitchers with ERAs over 5. We haven't mentioned that Chris Colabello made his AAA debut yesterday, and I know
he had a homer, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he had a home run. He was 2-for-4, had a walk, also a couple of strikeouts as well. But yeah, the clock is ticking, I guess, for him to try and impress here before he is activated off the suspension list this weekend. I don't know if the Blue Jays feel any pressure to call him up. If he's hitting well, though.
Where would he play?
First base and Edwin DH.
Whose spot would he take?
Well, right now, Andy Burns is on this team and not playing. So yeah, it wouldn't be a problem putting him on the 25-man roster because Andy Burns is just there.
I think Andy Burns is on the team because he can play multiple positions and he can run the bases.
Especially with these two interleague games.
That's a non-factor. I don't think that's where he's playing. I'm just saying, I mean, you got a good point about where, why, and when he's getting called up. To me, he has to prove himself. You know, you can think about what you want about Chris Colabello. I like him as a person. I've had numerous conversations with him. He's one of the nicest people in the world. Mm-hmm. Baseball's done a very good job of testing. You get caught with something, you deal with, you move on. He's trying to do that by the looks of it with the hit, the home run. But if I'm in the front staff of the Blue Jays, I'm making him prove himself at AAA. And then September, if he does well, that's when he's coming up. And if he helps your team, then you go from there. It's, you know, the whole point about he can't make a playoff roster, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because you're taking somebody else's spot that may be on that roster. It's that kind of thing. So, well, of course you do. But we're talking about Chris Colabello being on a team and why he wouldn't or why he would be on it.
It's easy to forget as well that he came into the season as the incumbent first baseman. He was going to start every day at first base pretty much. And I know Justin Smoak was going to get the occasional start and was. But Chris Colabello started every playoff game after the first couple of last year and hit the snot out of the baseball. Perhaps performance enhanced, and certainly recent history would suggest that. But yeah, to write him off as a non-factor.
I think there's a lot other things you could worry about being a Blue Jays fan and being a part of the Blue Jays and worried about bullpens and who's going to start and who's going to do well and how you're going to manufacture runs and how you're going to win games in the American League East. And I think there's a lot of other things they're going to worry about before Chris Colabello, and that'll work itself out. He does well in AAA. Yeah. We're going to see him sometime or the other. Will it be 3 days from now? Probably not. Unless somebody gets hurt around where he plays, then you may.
Well, so far so good. 2-for-4 with a homer and a walk yesterday. Did you see the ceremony the Indians had for Yan Gomes because he's had such rough luck?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like a scene out of Major League. Not so much. He is out 4 to 8 weeks with an AC joint injury in his shoulder. That's a tough one. Probably needed a live chicken because they used it was like a frozen chicken.
Yeah, that's never good. The Indians, last time I checked, pretty good team.
Yes,
and when you have a catcher that can put the right fingers down and help your team with the bat, I know he wasn't having a good year swinging it, but, you know, even the presence of him in your lineup and handling pitching staffs and, you know, you get a veteran pitching staff that's used to throwing to a guy and now he's not there, that's a big loss.
Also a big loss for the Detroit Tigers when it comes to the Devin Travis trade because now Anthony Gose has been demoted to AA. And not only that, this is after his run-in with his AAA manager, Lloyd McClendon, former Major League manager, who's had his fair share of moments in the Major Leagues as far as emotional responses to things. Now he's done talking to the media. He says, I hate all media. So that's you now as well.
Well, congratulations. There's not a lot of media in AA, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. You won't probably have much of an issue in Erie with the Seawolves.
There you go.
Blue Jays looking pretty good on the back end of that
trade.
He
won't have to worry about talking to him.
No, Devin Travis is an everyday player at second base and a pretty good one as well.
And
we wish Anthony Gose all the best and a return to the major leagues, but so far not so good for him. Still can steal a base or two and play some defense, so maybe you see him back in the major leagues. But the Blue Jays start a two-game series tonight in Zona against the Diamondbacks. 9:40 first pitch, 9 o'clock pregame show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet and the Sportsnet Now app. Aaron Sanchez taking his 9-1 record, ERA 2.97, to the desert against Arizona righty Zach Godley. He's 2-0 with an ERA of 5.28. Tomorrow, Marcus Stroman against Patrick Corbin, 3:40. That'll do it for Kevin Barker. I'm Ben Ennis. This has been Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.